Once again, I'm Larry, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober today by the grace of God in AA. This first speaker today on our subject of AA's history of love and service is Ernie G. Ernie?
Good evening, group. My name is Ernest G., better known as Gabe. My sobriety date is January the 25th, 1980. My home group is the Nativity Group at the People's Congregational Church at 4704 13th Street Northwest. Through God, Washington, oh yes, Washington, D.C. And with God's help, through God's grace, and me being in charge, I'm planning on making it the best group in the world. Lord, I am so nervous. First of all, I want to thank the committee for selecting me to speak here today. And I especially want to thank my dear friend, Laura J., for putting my name in. She's the best friend I got in the world, other than my wife. I must say my wife. But you know, I had this paper that I had ran through, and what I did was I went in the book, and I drew up some names. And in meditating this morning and listening to the first speakers this morning, something said to me, let me run the show. I said, thank you, God. I'm going to let you run the show. I always say a short prayer whenever I get up here or whenever I lead a meeting and speak. And what I'm doing is, so once again in my life, I'm turning my life and my will over to the care of God. What I'm talking about is love and service. Because it was in love and service that I am where I am today. And also, I want to thank y'all for the applause, but I am not buying the first round. So you don't... You don't know what I'm talking about too, don't you? But that was one of my things, buying the first round, you understand? To get it up off the ground. But you know, when you speak about love and service, it started when Bob and Bill first sat down together. That's when love and service started. It started right there when one drunk helping another drunk on the road to recovery. For me, and thank God that God put those two men together to start this beautiful program so a guy like me can stand before a group of people like you and tell you that everything that I am, I owe to y'all and to my wife. You notice I keep saying my wife. Yeah. And most of all, I want to thank my friends from the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area and Maryland for being here to support me. I really thank you for that. You know what I mean? I love y'all. They say I'm the craziest guy on the bus. They have tried several times to put me off, but I refuse to let them do that. They say it's love and service is the reason why they were putting me off, but that's not true. But you know, the reality, when you talk about love and service, the greatest love and service that Alcoholics Anonymous has given to the world was the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. I mean, what other thing that could anybody give to the world than the 12 steps and 12 traditions for anybody to use in any form in their life? You know, these are principles that if applied will guarantee that your life will get better. Not just for drunks, for people of all walks of life, that this thing works. You know, it was at a convention like this that Bill turned this fellowship over to us. It was that step of maturity. And all of you that read anything or know anything about Bill Wilson, that he was not for turning nothing over to nobody. You understand? He was for holding on tight and running everything. But he remembered what Dr. Bob told him. For God's sake, son, keep this thing simple. You know? But when he told him that, he was speaking to all of us. To keep this thing simple. You know, it was at the St. Louis Convention. Yes. In 1955, at a meeting like this, that AA came to full maturity. Because it was there that Bill Wilson turned his fellowship over to us. Yeah. He felt that we were ready to take that all-important step of moving forward. And thank God that he was ready, that we were ready to assume that position. You know, at first I was thinking about love and service, and I was thinking about it on a large, magnanimous scale like we are here at a world convention. But when I think about love and service, I think back to my groups that I started out with. The Cosmopolitan Group, the Nativity Group. Those are the groups, Mideast and Near East. I stand here today. You see me standing here on this podium, but what you see, what you don't see, is the giants that I am standing on. Jack J. It was so many of them. I just can't think of all the people that are supporting me right now. For me to be where I'm at right now. Tony's sponsor. I don't know why I can't think of his name. Jack A. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, it was just hundreds of them that were here when I got here, that told me the all-important words, sit down and shut up. You don't know nothing. They have passed on, but I'll tell them this, I still don't know nothing. That's the reality. I still don't know nothing. But the difference is, today I know I don't know anything. That's the beauty. You know, love and service started with two people and has branched out to thousands. Thousands. You know, who would ever thought that this thing would branch out to so many thousands of people? Here we are here in Canada. You know, just a few short hours ago, I was back in D.C. And thanks to modern miracles of transportation, I have come a long way, baby. You know, I look down at this thing, and it says in 1953, the steps and the traditions were published. But the beauty about it was that it had to be accepted at a convention like this. By people like us. You know, we are a strange conglomerate of people. People that don't know nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous look at us and think that somebody runs this program. We run it. We are the ones that run Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's the pyramid like this. It goes from the group level up, not from New York down. Now that is true love and service. Because a guy like me got just as much to say as anybody out there about how this program is to be run and how it's to be affected. You know, it says that we are but trusted servants. When our rep goes to New York from Area 13, she go with our mandate, not her mandate. You know, we had that to happen, that one of our representatives went to New York with their mandate. And when their term was up, we haven't seen them since. Maybe we need to be talking about resentment, huh? But when you speak about love and service, what greater love, like I said, than the 12 steps to be given to the world? It started out for drunks like us, but it has encompassed so many other, from every 12-step program that has come into fruition has sprung from our 12 steps. Now, you cannot think of anything that's more loving and more caring, that we give away so freely to anybody that suffers. That's the beauty about this thing. You know. And being alcoholics, well, you know, we're grandiose. God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, but he had to give up 12 steps because you know that we need just a little bit more than that. We had to one up the Lord one more time. You know, but the reality is, I am blessed. And when I keep saying I am blessed for the simple reason that y'all love me long enough for me to learn how to love myself. You know, I look out there and I see people out there that were here when I got here and are still here and they're still loving me and they're still caring about me. They told me that they love me, but at the border they had planned on putting me off. They wasn't going to throw me off. They were going to put me off with love. You know, but thank God that they didn't, because they cared enough about me to allow me to be me. That's the most important thing. That I am a child of God. And that being a child of God, I have been loved to be loved enough to pass on what little knowledge I don't have. You see, you know, I told you I didn't know nothing, so I won't ever tell you what knowledge I got. I have none. Anything that you hear me say here was taught to me when I got here. Now, that's love. That's love. Anything that I learned here. You know, I learned because I came in these rooms and I sat down and I listened to what y'all had to say. You know, when I was sitting there and this gentleman was reading all of the anonymity stuff, and I said, you know what I'm thinking? I said, you know, they would have to read this anonymity stuff now. I said, here I am in all my splendor, and nobody's taking not a picture. There's not no video camera on me at all. You know what I mean? I mean, look at me. If this isn't the result of love, I don't know what it is. This is the result of love and service. Service. And service doesn't necessarily mean being a DCM. And service is picking up a cup. Service is shaking that new man's hand that come through the door. Service is being to talk to somebody on the telephone. Service is just being at a meeting, because you never know that when somebody will walk in there that you know 25 or 30 years ago, and they hear you say you've been here an X number of days or X number of years, and they'll say, if that fool can make it, so can I. You know, that's service. You know, last night I was down in Atlantic City. I mean, whoops. I was down at the casino, and there was this guy sitting there, and he was counting his pennies, and he looked like he was hungry. You could see that he had a rough life. I went in my pocket, I had some change, I gave it to him, so I got some money. My wife wanted something, so I made her give me some money. I want to spend my money. I'm tired of taking my money. And she gave me a handful of Canadian dollars and $2, and I paid for what she wanted. So I went on, I gave him the rest of the money. And he thanked me. But it wasn't about thanking me. It wasn't about doing something to be grandiose. And what it was about was that if I don't continue to sit and come with y'all, the next handout, it might be my handout, looking for somebody to give me something. You know, that's what y'all taught me. if you want to keep this name, not only give it back to alcoholics in recovery, but give it back to people in general. When they talk about love and service, it's being love and service to humanity, to mankind and womankind and childrenkind. That's what love and service is about. And the test is when you don't want to do it. That's the ultimate test. When you got something better to do, some other place to be, or somebody else to be with, and that phone ring, and somebody said, man, I'm in bad shape. Can you help me? That's the ultimate test of love and service, is to be there for that person. To reach out and take that trembling hand and say, through God's grace, I love you. I know how you feel. I like what that man said this morning. He said, you'll meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. And I want to thank you. And I hope to God we travel this road together again. God bless you.
Thank you.
Lise.
Hello, my fellow Hayes. First of all, to all the Canadians, we should say Happy Canada Day.
Yes.
I still hear some people from faraway places.
I salute here people from faraway places. We have some people from Tahiti. We have some people from France. We have some people from Belgium. I don't know if you left. We have some people from Sherbrooke. I don't know. I didn't see any more. But this is all the result of the service years I gave, all the results of my life in A, after such a miserable turn off. I was A member since February 1970. So today I have to tell you, it takes me longer to put some makeup on and look like, you know. But when I came to AA in Montreal, there was not many meetings in the west side. So the little group we were, we decided to open groups, three or four. This is what I call service. This was for us, we devoted our energy to that and to make sure that the group would function well and then leave it after 1 year. This was, for me, my first form of service. For sure, after that, we had some sponsors. We had people who called at 2 o'clock in the morning. In these years, we were ready all the time. We were like Girl Scout, always ready to help. And then very early on, I was asked to be part of a literature committee in Montreal, because Montreal A was founded in 1944, and even in the 1970s, there was not many literature. So everything had to be done. We had to find some translators. We had to find some people to do the correction, the layout, deal with the printers and what have you. So since it was a bit my field of working, they asked me, and boy, did I devote myself in that. You wouldn't have taken that job away from me for all the gold in the world. And I was good. I was doing it service, and I was doing it with love. So that's the way it happened. Finally, year after year, we developed many pamphlets that our French AA people need, because how can you get sober if you don't have any literature? this is the first thing you need. It's good to connect with one person, but when you don't have the thing to read and to meditate, and so that's what we try to give to the French-speaking member. And finally, not only from Canada, but some people from France also used our literature. We were working in a committee, and I always say that your ego should be as equal as your brain. But sometimes ego is a bit bigger. I don't know how it happens. Maybe this is the way we are, alcoholics. So there's always a couple of people who know it all, who things who can do better. And by doing better, they destroy. But we have a team in New York, the General Service Office and A World Services, wise people, the wisest people I would know. They just came to Montreal, they listened to the complaints, they checked the books, they checked the guy, the people, and they say, I'm sure you can manage. So finally, don't ask me how it ended up, but things patched up again. We finally managed to publish more and more, like the third edition of the big book, and A Comes of Age, and many things at the convention in 1985. Did we work with Sarah, who was the coordinator? Laurent would remember Sarah, a beautiful, great, tall lady. And we worked with her with all the French fact, the press conference, and that was, for me, the best kind of service I could give. And 20 years after, as I say, another bomb fell. Another big ego, or two, or three, came. I always think that when you work in service, make the coffee, greet the people, respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. This is the, did I spell it right? This is the first thing in the mind of people. I mean, you don't treat a baby like, not even like a dog. I don't treat a dog or a baby bad. You treat people, or you treat things with respect. So if you don't, you come in A and you think that you know it all, and you learned it all, and it's your turn to make war, well, it doesn't work. Every time I saw a committee or a place where people had respect, everything was working very well. So once again, the New York people, gracious as always, came, tried to help us solve our problem, never telling us, this is what you should do, telling us, experience taught us that. This is the way New York reacts. Finally, this doesn't work, so New York finally decided to take the French literature and take care of it. Everything was almost translated, so my unusual form of service has always been with literature, with trying to have the written word to the French people, and I know that in Spanish it's the same, and in so many languages, like it was said before, service is not only being a GSR, it's not only being a delegate, it's also giving to your neighbor what you receive. And what you receive, I received a lot. I was very... The people were very generous. God was generous towards me. Sometimes I'm home and I'm discouraged. I says, I'm so grateful. I have so many things coming to me. Not even things, goodness, not only material thing, goodness. I'm emotional and I don't know what to do with that. But I always say, carry it to the other. There was a film like that. And I think that the way that we should react is always when we see something, give it away, afraid to lose it. Service takes many forms. We were told you that before. Service is even with your son who had a slip and he's trying to get back on the right track. Service is closing the door when he's too mad to understand. And then he calls mom and he says, well, I'll go to meetings. And the son is going very well now because it's a language from mom to son, and I drive him to talk to other people, and finally himself he'll understand that through service he can stay sober and he can be responsible. That's what I wish you all. To learn to be responsible and to have the brain the same size of your ego.
I've known of Lise and her service for French-speaking AAs in Canada and also in France. Before no one can know the hours of dedication and heart and time that she gave and gives to Alcoholics Anonymous. Eileen G. from New York.
Hello, my name is Eileen G. and I am an alcoholic. I'm actually a grateful alcoholic, and I remember when I first came into AA and I heard people say that, I wanted to smack them. I wanted to do more than smack them because I thought it was a bunch of baloney. I didn't see how anybody could be grateful for this. And looking back now over my life in AA, which thank God is now over 26 years, I am just so unbelievably grateful. I wouldn't change this for the world. I was thinking about this just yesterday. I if you have cancer, if you have heart disease, some horrible disease, I know you can overcome this and you can be of service to people, but there's something about this disease. Thank God. I mean, we're so blessed to be alcoholics in AA. I can't think of anything better. I can't. So anyway, and I've also been thinking a lot about the history of love and service and where this comes from. We have the richest history, and I know that I was in AA for quite a while before I actually got interested in the history of this incredible fellowship. And once I did, and once I started learning about it, my sobriety got deeper, and my gratitude got deeper. And my sobriety and my spirituality is really just having a grateful heart sometimes, just being so grateful for all the blessings. And the people who came before us to make all of this possible. When I think of the history of AA, I think of the hand of God, because there's so many times when this almost didn't happen. It's quite extraordinary. And I was trying to think back, when did it actually start? When does our history actually start? And I thought of Carl Jung in Europe, talking to Roland H., the first person, Roland H., who was a very wealthy man who couldn't stay sober, and so he goes to Europe, and he wanted to find, Sigmund Freud. And thank God Freud said no. Thank God Freud said no. So he went to see the second most famous psychiatrist in Europe, and that was Carl Jung, who was a very spiritual person. And after Jung could not eventually help Roland gets sober and stays sober, he told him that what he needed was a spiritual experience, that an alcoholic of this type needed a spiritual experience. Roland comes back to the United States and joins the Oxford group, and with a friend named Shep, shows up when Ebbie T. is about ready to be put into an insane asylum by court order, and says to the judge, who is actually Shep's father, "We think we can help this person." And they helped Ebbie. And then after Ebbie went through the Oxford program and turned his life over to God and made restitution to the people he had harmed and had made a moral assessment of his life, he said, "What do I do next?" And they said, "You find the worst drunk you know and you tell him about this." "Okay, class, who was it?" You get an A. Bill Wilson. He knew it. It was Bill Wilson in Brooklyn. And he goes to visit Bill, and Bill is in the tank, hopeless drunk. By his own admission, when you read his story in the big book, he says, "I was hopeless." He knew he was hopeless, but he wasn't hopeless. There was hope. And it came in the form of his former drunken and broken friend walking up those steps at 182 Clinton Street in Brooklyn Heights. And if you ever get the chance to go there and just stand in front of that apartment, that brownstone, it's quite thrilling. It's owned by somebody. I guess they wonder why the heck all these people come and look at this place. But it is thrilling to see this. Ebbie comes in and sits down with Bill and has a conversation at a kitchen table. And the world changes. The world changes. And not all of a sudden, but eventually Bill gets sober a few weeks later at the town's hospital. And I'm very grateful to Dr. Silkworth for being there, for never giving up on Bill. Bill had been in town's hospital a few times, and Silkworth was actually discouraged because when Bill first came to town's hospital, he thought he saw something in this guy that maybe he could get sober. But of course he didn't until he had a spiritual awakening in the hospital. And Silkworth says to him, "You know, I don't know what's happened to you, but it's something and you better hold on to it." And I'm grateful to Bill when he went out 6 months later before that, I'm grateful to Lois B., his wife, and everybody in AA owes this woman a debt of gratitude that is extraordinary, because not only did she keep Bill alive all those years, but she also told him something that made all the difference. And what she did was, when Bill got out of town's hospital, and he was like, you know, he was like he was shot out of a cannon. And the truth is that anybody who's doing so has to do something great and is fueled by God feels that way. They have to have that extraordinary energy to go out and do something impossible. And here's Bill trying to get people sober, pulling them out of the street. He's helping nobody. And it was very hard to discourage Bill. It was one of his great traits that he was always internally optimistic, but he was getting discouraged. And it was Lois who said to him, when he was really quite despondent one day coming back because he couldn't help anybody, she said, "You know something, Bill? Maybe this hasn't helped anybody else, but it's helped you. You haven't wanted anything to drink." And that's how we stay sober. We stay sober by helping somebody else, whether they want it or not. My success rate in working with new people is 100%. I never got drunk. I don't get anybody sober. I just carry a message. And it's up to God and up to them whether they're going to accept it or not. But I have the responsibility to carry the message. So when Bill goes out to Akron, Ohio, and I'm grateful to the people who told him that he couldn't buy the business, because that's why Bill went out there. He and Lois were broke. They didn't have a dime. And so he's going out with some friends to buy a business in Akron. The business goes south. I mean, Bill's not going to get... I'm so grateful they wouldn't sell it to this guy. Because what Bill winds up in the hotel lobby of a Mayflower hotel, and he's ready to go into the bar, and he remembers what his wife said to him. And instead, he realized he needed to talk to somebody. Before, he thought everybody needed him. Now he realized that he needed somebody. And I'm grateful that there was the Mayflower Hotel had a directory, and that he went over to the directory and he chose any name. And there's all these ministers, rabbis. He chooses the name Reverend Tonks. And he was asked later, Bill, why did you choose Reverend Tonks out of all those people? He says, well, there's this saying about in Vermont, where Bill was from, you know, about tonking through the woods. So he called, whatever that means. Sure, it's a lot of fun. Anyway. So he calls Reverend Tonks and asks Reverend Tonks, he says, my name is Bill Wilson, I'm a rum hound from New York, and I need to speak to an alcoholic in the Oxford group. Do you know anybody? Because Bill had been going to Oxford group meetings too. And Reverend Tonks says, I know a few people. He gives him a list of names, and eventually he calls, very reluctantly, Henrietta Cyberling. He knew who the Cyberlings were. They were the richest people in Akron, Ohio. And he thought that this was the Mrs. Cyberling. It turns out that it's the daughter-in-law of the Cyberlings. And Henrietta had been working with Dr. Bob and his wife Anne at the Oxford group meetings. Bob went there one day with his wife, and there was a special meeting that had been planned for him because Bob would never admit that he was an alcoholic. And so Henrietta had a special meeting where she invited people that had very difficult things to share, and they shared them. And at the end, Bob said, you know, I'm very grateful that all of you said this, but I have something that I need to share too. I'm a silent drinker. I can't stop. I know everything there is to know about alcoholism. I can't stop drinking. I don't know how. And they asked him if he wanted to stop, and he said yes. And just imagine this moment in this house. It was another people I'm grateful for. T. Henry and Clarice Williams had this meeting at their house. And imagine this. They're all laying hands on Bob and praying for a miracle in his life. And Bob continues to drink. And the miracle showed up in the guise of a broken-down stockbroker from New York who calls Henrietta Cyberling on the phone sometime later and says, I need to speak to another alcoholic. I need to speak to an alcoholic. Do you know anybody? And boy, did she. She knew Dr. Bob. And she calls up Anne. It was the day before Mother's Day, Bob's wife, and says, I've got this man who has this great cure for alcoholism. We're coming over. And, well, they couldn't because Bob was drunk. It was the day before Mother's Day, and he was a very good husband when he was sober. and he brought a potted plant home, and he collapsed. He passed out. And she used the old euphemism, he's not feeling well. And Henrietta said, well, you bring him tomorrow. And the only reason... And I had the privilege of knowing Smitty, Dr. Bob's son, and I asked him this. I said, there are only two times that in a year that your father would have gone to see this man, and that was either his wife's aunt, your mother's birthday or Mother's Day. And he said that was his Mother's Day, and he owed it to her. So when she said to him, you know, we're going tomorrow or today or whenever it was, was clear, and we're going to see this guy. He said, I'll go for 15 minutes. And he did. He went, well, you know the story. It wasn't 15 minutes. They stayed for 6 hours. And I'm also grateful that both of these men came from Vermont, because that was the thing, I believe, that made it all possible, because these weren't too strange. This wasn't the slick New York stockbroker or the country hick from Ohio. These were two men from Vermont, and I travel a lot, and I know you probably do too, and when you meet somebody, or when you met somebody today, probably you said, where are you from? One of the first things you ask somebody. And so, where are you from? I'm from Vermont. Really, I'm from Vermont too. And Dr. Bob says in his story in the big book, The Doctor's Nightmare, he said, this man spoke my language. They spoke Vermont, you know, like the tonking through the woods thing. So anyway, I'm very grateful. I only have 5 more minutes to express my gratitude, so I'll go down the list. You know, there's so many people that made this fellowship what it is. And I was also very grateful in the early days for the people who were not alcoholic, like Father Dowling, who was Bill's spiritual sponsor, and Leonard Strong, who was Bill's Bill's brother-in-law, who helped him get sober, and in the early days made the connection with the Rockefellers, who had this wonderful dinner and gave us the great idea of being self-supporting, because Bill and Bob both thought the Rockefellers would give them, you know, lots of money to fund this thing. And they said, no, this is going to spoil it. You know, you need to be self-supporting. And that's been one of our greatest strengths, that we are self-supporting. And I know that a lot of people leave money every year to AA. You know, some little old lady in anywhere, you know, has heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. And so she dies, and in her will, she sent them like $1,000 or whatever. And they have to return it. You know, we can't take it. She wasn't in AA. You know, everybody else who's come after that, Jack Alexander, and, you know, people not necessarily who were alcoholics, but who eventually served us in ways that really are ineffable. And we owe all these people such a great debt of gratitude. And, you know, the greatest thing, though, is that we are also part of this history. You know, it's not something, history isn't something that happened, you know, 70 years ago. What happened 70 years ago is part of this history. We are part of it. And we can continue this legacy of love and service through our own lives and in the work that we do in AA, answering a telephone call or volunteering in your group. And just as someone said earlier, doing service. You know, to me, the greatest service you can do in your group, no matter how many years you have, is mopping the floor or making the coffee, because we are role models to new people. We're not only role models because we're sober and we've been sober for a certain amount of time. We're also role models because we serve our group. And all service is great service in AA. Reaching out, walking over to somebody you don't know at a meeting. That could, for all we know, that could be somebody's first meeting. And if that person hasn't been greeted and welcomed, we're falling short of what was given so freely to us. It's a great thing to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just grateful to everybody showing up at this event, and grateful to you being here. And I'd like to close with a quote from Bill Wilson about AA. And what he said was that AA should endure, and this is a quote, to serve God's purpose for so long as it is destined under His providence to endure. Thank you very much.
As I look around the room, I don't see any two people that look alike. And our speakers represent in their own way the diversity of the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think we should give them another round of applause. I would like to say that I have a sobriety date. I got sober in a little town in South Dakota in 1971. And actually, it was the last day of 1971. And I haven't had to take a drink since then. But when I was there, I was terrorized and stricken and weak and beaten. And I had nothing left. And those men, and the one woman who was a member of that group, brought me back to life. And that was the service, the main service that was done for me. I had been described as a pathological liar. I was definitely a drunk driver for many times. The dean of the college I was going to at one time told me that I was alcoholic, and then also He did. He's the one that first told me I was a pathological liar. And over my time of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been given the privilege to be many places and do many things. And I have seen service and love in Alcoholics Anonymous in just about every corner of the world. As I served as trustee at large for the United States and a World Service Meeting delegate. This morning I sat with breakfast with people from all over the world. And last night I had I shook hands with the chairman of the General Service Board from Mongolia. Alcoholics Anonymous is expanded and grown in God's love, nearly fills everywhere, but not everywhere. Because a previous meeting this morning, a man described areas of the world where Alcoholics Anonymous cannot go because of religious and governmental reasons, and poverty and prejudice. There are areas of the world where AA just has not been able to be transmitted yet. In those places, the alcoholic has no hope. Everywhere we go, everywhere you will go, everywhere I will go, there will be a history in our life that is going to meet a need. It's almost like a key fitting a lock. When I return home, and I believe in my mind, when each one of you returns home, there will be someone who will need that key and be that person that we will love back to life again. Bill Wilson had many dreams about Alcoholics Anonymous. He had it from the beginning when he left that hospital, as our last speaker shared, and he had a vision of a society of alcoholics, one reaching out and helping, been given what he'd been so freely given in the hospital. They would reach out and touch another, and that one another, and AA would, the society would grow geometrically. And it can, and it has. And he spent his entire sobriety, sometimes, as was mentioned, maybe kind of worried in even a controlling fashion, worried and concerned for the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. So much so that he wrote those traditions and penned that book with the help of the people in Akron and the criticisms of many. The big book made its way to press. But Bill had a vision for Alcoholics Anonymous that never ended. In his dying moments, when he was at the last international convention he could attend in 1970 in Miami, he rose up hardly able to lift himself up out of a wheelchair with a host committee of Esteban and talked about unity. And it's in my mind today, because I have witnessed problems where AA is not united. I've felt divisions everywhere from where I come from in San Diego to where I have been in Finland and in Mexico. There are places where there are problems in Alcoholics Anonymous. And unity, that thing that allows us to have in our heart the diverse picture, the diverseness in our picture of God, the diverseness in our colors, our skins, our faiths, our lack of faith, our occupations, our economic status, our educational, nothing matters, but there's a diversity in us that leads not to separation, but to great joy and unity. Unity is not optional, and it is the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill Wilson, I got a page here, he said something, and I'll close after... There's a little talk he gave in Memphis about the traditions he had just written in October 1947. He said, some years ago, Dr. Bob and I, among others, did a lot of traveling and speaking at AA groups the length and breadth of the country. Alcoholics Anonymous was just starting its astonishing growth. There was concern whether we could successfully expand so fast. Widely separated clusters of AAs were making their uncertain start, often too far from the original few groups to get much direct help. Many had to rely wholly on literature and letters. To meet this seeming emergency, the few of us who could do so got out among the new groups. We wanted to bring our experience and encouragement directly to the incoming thousands who were still unsure. We wanted them to feel a part of the growing whole. We wanted them to see that AA had nothing to do with geography, that it would work for them under any conditions whatever. We wished to foster a sound growth and the spirit of unity. So a few of us traveled much. Times have changed. And if Bill Wilson could see the rooms filled with alcoholics here today, who have traveled much to be here. We will all go back home, and I hope with my little picture and my hope for the future of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we will reach out with that diversity, that love, that heart, and carry our experience, strength, and hope in a way that will never let AA die, and that God will always want to love us back to life. Thank you for being here, and thank you for my life. After a moment of silence and thoughtful contemplation of the loving higher power who presides over us all, we will first say the responsibility statement, the theme of the convention, followed by the serenity prayer. But we'll make it a little extended for those alcoholics who can't get here yet. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Thank you.